Good morning. As Andrea said, my name is Lindsay Hamilton. I am the now former fellow for New Jersey Department of Health. These are my disclaimers. There were some CDC authors on this, and so there are disclaimers up as well. So this whole infection control assessment initiative started back with the U.S. Ebola response. Gaps identified during that really allowed the CDC to offer Ebola supplemental grant under the ELC Cooperative Agreement back in 2015. And New Jersey, along with other states, applied for this additional funding to help build infection control response capacity in healthcare, laboratory, and even airport settings. As part of this cooperative agreement, the New Jersey Department of Health set goals for the number of infection control assessments to be conducted in hospitals, long-term care facilities, outpatient facilities, and dialysis centers, and a minimum of 20 centers was our goal set for the dialysis setting. Then the New Jersey Department of Health decided on a sampling plan for the 153 hemodialysis centers located in New Jersey. The first 9 centers were selected based on the 16 cases of healthcare-associated hepatitis C transmission in the last 2 years. The rest were selected based on geographic distribution, center size, center ownership type, and volunteered or suggested centers from the leadership of large dialysis organizations. In October of 2015, these on-site infection control assessments were begun. The first 9 centers with previous hepatitis C transmission were conducted as part of an EpiAid response with CDC assistance. And as of May 2016, 20 center assessments were completed, reaching the New Jersey minimum goal. For all of these infection control assessments, there was an in-person site visit conducted. The original visits lasted a day and a half, but later visits were done in just 1 day. And visits were conducted with 3 to 6 public health personnel. During these visits, the New Jersey Department of Health met with center leadership to describe the purpose and outline the visit. Leadership and staff were interviewed on infection control policies and practices, and floor staff were directly observed during the major steps of dialysis. These observations were completed using the 8 CDC standardized auditing tools. And in 20 of these or in 10 of these 20 centers, education sessions were held for floor staff. These sessions consisted of hepatitis C education, the CDC best practices dialysis video, and short group discussion. In 10 centers, we also conducted a skills demonstration for station disinfection, and this was done using a blacklight product. Finally, there was a summary meeting held to discuss the findings and wrap up the visit. So since the interviews are a little hard to summarize, I'm just going to show you some of the direct observation audit data that we collected for all 20 centers. To note on the ranges, you'll notice that most have a lower end of 0, and I'll explain this phenomenon in just a little bit. But the 3 highest practices were cannulation, medication preparation, and hand hygiene. And the bottom 3 were catheter connection, catheter disconnection, and station disinfection. And I'd like to point out that there are much fewer observations for catheter connection and disconnection, and this is because fistulas and grafts have been proven to have fewer infections than catheters, so dialysis centers really try to push for the transition from the catheter access to fistula or graft access. And now I want to dive a little deeper into one of these practices as an example. We're going to look at the cannulation tool to help explain why we see such a wide range. So this is just a visual of the cannulation tool that we use during the visits. You can see in the first column it's meant to indicate the discipline of the staff member you're observing, for example, a nurse or a technician. And then there are 10 steps listed that are relevant to infection control practices for cannulation, and the last column is just for comments. So this graph shows the cannulation breakdown step by step for all 20 centers. And as a reminder, the overall success rate is shown in the last column. It was 62%. However, you can clearly see that none of the 10 individual steps were that low. In fact, the lowest success rate for any individual step was the lines connected aseptically step at 77%. And this is due to what the New Jersey Department of Health team started to call the all-or-nothing phenomenon. To explain this a bit more, in order for a cannulation to be considered a success, all 10 steps of cannulation must be successful. So if one or more of these steps was done incorrectly, that the whole cannulation would be considered unsuccessful. So in other words, whether a healthcare worker missed one step or eight steps, they were all equally counted as unsuccessful cannulations, which, as the center say, that's not fair. And it's not fair. So due to this all or nothing phenomenon, the New Jersey Department of Health quickly decided to show the breakdown step by step in our feedback to facilities in order to give more useful feedback to facilities as well. And now for a few more limitations we found during our first infection control assessments for the observation audits. So in addition to the all or nothing idea, there's also a learning curve to using the audit tool, since not everybody has a medical background or has even seen a person be dialyzed before. There's also a bit of a difference in what public health observers consider a successful step. This was noticed not only with New Jersey Department of Health staff, but also CDC staff, and this could be due to a difference of opinion or a carefulness of observation. And this was seen most obviously with the hand hygiene tool. It became very apparent that some people were observing hand hygiene done for the right time, or at the right time with the right material, so soap and water versus alcohol-based hand sanitizer. But a few of our public health observers were looking also for proper technique of washing and drying. For example, if the healthcare worker didn't wait for the alcohol to dry completely or didn't scrub rigorously enough, it was being counted as a fail by some observers, but it passed by other observers. So this just showed us the need for training of all observers before going out into the field for these assessments. And now for some anecdotal observations that were not necessarily captured with the observation tools. A few practices we saw that didn't necessarily meet CDC recommended practices were starting disinfection of the station before the patient had left, not using antibiotic ointment during catheter site care, using non-recommended skin antiseptic before cannulation, soaking clamps in the closed position, and the lack of separation and clean and dirty in the environment. Some of this can be attributed to the difference in CMS and CDC recommendations. Centers are much more likely to follow CMS guidelines since that is their regulatory agency. And I'd like to go into a little bit more detail on that last bolded idea of the clean and dirty separation, starting with this picture seen here. There's a three-tiered shelf. It's a beige shelf sort of in the middle, and it actually has clean clamps drying on it. However, it's right next to a trash can and a dirty sink. In this left picture, there are two side-by-side stations, but notice the computer on wheels in the middle. This computer was used for both stations and was often used by the same nurse who is assigned to both stations. So while the ideal separation of stations is 3 to 6 feet, this computer meant that the separation was actually 0 feet for these two stations. And in the lower right picture, you can see a clean sink with prime buckets drying right next to a dirty sink where they would use to empty used IV bags. And you can even see, it's hard to see, but there's a couple IV bags left in the sink to drain right next to those drying prime buckets. And this lack of separation is obviously not ideal, but often due to a lack of space in centers, these setups could often not be changed. And now for a few examples in the ranges we saw in medication preparation areas. This first is a medication cart. The pages on, or the papers on top of the medication cart are the orders to be filled. And the meds were prepped right on top of the cart where those papers are. This medication cart was also right across from actual dialysis stations. It was probably just 5 feet away from them. In this next example, there's a countertop that is much more removed from the treatment area. It's a little cleaner since they have a designated prep surface, and there's a low wall edge that separates it from the stations behind. The best option, however, was a separate room. You can kind of see that there's a door to get into this med prep room. The countertop is kept clean, and you can't really see it in the picture, but there's a sink and PPE station right outside the door. And now for feedback to facilities. Here's an example of the actual tables we sent that outlined the step-by-step success rates of the different observation tools. This one is again for cannulation. You can see that instead of the bar graphs you saw earlier, we used a simple color-coded graphic that indicated which steps needed to be improved by centers. The green checks were for 90% and above, the orange single exclamation was 70 to 89%, and the red double exclamation was 69% or lower. So these are summary tables of the interviews that we conducted. We tried to highlight both the good and the bad practices or policies of the centers. I just have a few examples here of the different subject areas discussed during the interview portion of the visit, and we used uniformed bulleted statements for all the centers, and within the subject area boxes, we would just change these stock statements between the positive and the negative depending on what we observed at the facility. So after all the visits, there was a few common areas for improvement: maintaining aseptic technique when connecting and disconnecting from the machine, aseptic preparation and administration of medications, hand hygiene, and environmental disinfection, including the stations. And in order to make sure these improvements do occur, New Jersey Department of Health will continue to educate center staff, follow up with, and monitor center's progress in order to prevent future disease transmission. So some of the visits were met with more opposition than others, but we think the visits overall were largely successful, especially given the number of centers that have made changes since the visits occurred. One of the large dialysis organizations has actually changed their national practice for catheter connection. They have added a hand hygiene and glove change step between when the machine lines are primed and when the catheter lines are connected aseptically to this primed machine tubing. And a few centers have added in the practice of using antibiotic ointment during catheter site care. New Jersey Department of Health has started to complete the 6-month follow-up calls to the facilities, and we're finding a large variation in the impact of changes made at the centers, but many centers are indeed making improvements. And it's been suggested by some stakeholders that we add an additional 12-month follow-up call paired with a self-assessment by the center of their infection control practices using the same interview questions that we asked during the initial site visits. And I'd like to acknowledge all my colleagues that contributed to this initiative, and if there are any questions, I can take them now.
If anybody has any questions, please come up and again, give your name and where you're from, please, before you ask the question.
Hey, Lindsay. Isaac Hendricks, New York City. Very nice talk. Thanks for sharing all of this. I wanted to pick on your all or nothing assessments. So I get it, you know, if you're doing 9 out of 10 steps, maybe it's not fair. But if you're a patient, it's not fair if they're not doing all 10. So how did you handle that and talk about that with facilities?
Yeah, well, I think the bigger thing was the usefulness of the feedback to centers. If you're just getting 62% for cannulation, that's not really actionable information, and it's sort of discouraging to centers. So in order to get them motivated to make changes, we thought the step-by-step feedback showed them exactly which steps they performed worse in and which needed help.
It's more work for you probably, but I could see where that would be, and much more empowering if they know what the individuals, and also give some credit for what they have done.
Right, exactly. We thought it was worth it.
Okay, next question, please.
Hi, Lindsay. I'm Dana Higgins from Philadelphia. Thank you for your presentation. I was wondering if you noticed any differences, like infection control practices, between facilities with Hep C sero conversions and not.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I didn't actually show any sub-analysis, but the facilities that did have previous transmission definitely performed better on these visits, and we think it was because they had really held their practices under a microscope and improved them before we came for the ICAR visits.
Were they more welcoming when you came in, too, like more open to the discussion?
Yeah.
Thank you, Lindsay. Katrina from New Hampshire. So the all or nothing approach was really with observations, was it in any other areas of the assessment? We've done a couple in acute care settings, and we've seen that under the education and training component, there's a lot of training and education, but when it comes to actually competency-based training and observing it and having the IPs or the other staff watching every single person go through hand hygiene appropriately every year, that's been challenging.
Yeah, and that we sort of covered in those boxes, those subject area boxes. We would sort of put in statements about whether their practices and policies were adequate or not. But yeah, we found the same thing with training. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Great work.